Oh, come on, what is your old video?
I'm not working this way again, ever. This is absolutely horrible.
Hello, I'm John Waters, and I'm supposed to announce there is no smoking in this theater, which I think is one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard of in my life.
Clap, clap, tick, click, clap, clip. Bop, everybody, bop. Boom, bop, bip. Okay. I think we're good.
Okay.
Welcome to the Cinema Underground. Four dudes talk about four movies. We have a special subject this week, and it is...
H.P. Lovecraft.
Hewlett Packard Lovecraft.
Lovecraft, yeah. Baby Lovecraft.
Ooh, good one.
Every other podcast is going to do an episode about Lovecraft, and so are we, by God.
It's true.
It's true, except we're, mm-hmm. We're going to do it different, I guess, because we're going to talk about movies. Mm-hmm. We're talking about two movies in particular. The first pick is my pick. I'll do introductions here. Patrick Corey in the house.
What up? It's Mark Kitchen.
That's Mark Kitchen.
Jeff Brandon. Hi.
Word.
And Andy.
Andy Davis. Andy up Davis.
Andy D.
Okay. Andy D, baby. Sade. Do it. Okay, so the first one is From Beyond, released in 1986, directed by Stuart Gordon. And I don't remember who the second pick was.
Dagon. Directed by Stuart Gordon.
That was Mark. That's your pick?
Correct.
Dagon, okay.
Wait, directed by the same person?
Well, directed by Stuart Gordon. I know some things about Stuart Gordon, if you'd like to know them.
Nah. Sure.
He formed the Screw Theater at the University of Wisconsin. He was a cheddar goblin. And he was arrested for making a hippie rendition of Peter Pan that was an allegory for the 1968 Democratic Convention, in which the police came down hard on everybody. So in this play that they made, the hippie dips were where they were the Lost Boys, and the pirates were like the police, and they went around beating each other. And at some point, So at one point in the play, there's a series of new dancers, basically, when they're going to fly, and there's fairy dust, is LSD in this place, so they drop the LSD on each other's tongues, and like, you just have to think happy thoughts. And then there's a huge new dance sequence, and that's why they all got arrested, because they arrested on, indecency?
Public indecency.
Public indecency.
Indecent exposure.
Yeah. So after college, he moved to...
Wait, what's a cheddar goblin?
Cheddar goblin is a Wisconsinite. Somebody from Wisconsin, because they eat a lot of, the cheese. Like, they have the cheese heads and stuff.
You know what I was just thinking, though? Well, you know what that reminded me of? Reminded me of, when Nicolas Cage goes back into the house in Mandy?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then the TV?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cheddar Goblin.
Is that a Cheddar Goblin?
That's Cheddar Goblin.
Are they related?
Vaguely. I think they heard the word Cheddar Goblin.
Justin Lux.
Yeah.
They're Justin Lux.
Okay.
I think they just used that phrase, Cheddar Goblin, because it's funny. Probably. There might be something more to that. But, since we're reminiscing about the past, that Cheddar Goblin sketch, when we did our recorded Mandy thing, I didn't know at the time that skit was done by people from Adult Swim.
Really?
Yeah, it was. It was done by the people who did Too Many Chefs. Have you seen Too Many Chefs?
Too Many Cooks.
Too many cooks. Too Many Cooks.
That actual footage from in the TV?
Was from that? Yeah. Those guys made that. It wasn't Panos Cosmatos.
They made it for the movie,
right? Too Many Cooks can spoil
the fruit. Oh, that's cool.
It's very cool.
That makes sense. That makes sense
now, right?
Yeah.
Because it's so out of place.
Yeah, it is.
I was trying to like place it in the movie. I was like, what is Cosmatos trying to tell me?
Of course, it's an Adult Swim commercial.
Many cooks, so that's the level we're dealing with there. Pretty sweet.
Brilliant.
And also I think they had the same people who did Your Pretty Face is Going to Hell.
Mm-hmm.
Which is also pretty sweet. But yeah, so that's just throwing that back out there. So back to Stuart Gordon. So after college he moved to Chicago to form the Organic Theater Company, and he met a lot of people there. He met like Eugene Levy, all the Chicago dudes, like Bill Murray, all the Second City TV people. Those guys, a lot of good actors that I don't really remember the names of off the top of my head that he was talking about in this interview I watched with him. I'm trying to think. I want to say like John Hurt or somebody like that, maybe.
Classy.
No, but it probably wasn't him. I'm thinking of who's Angelina Jolie's dad. I want to say it was him.
John Voight.
Voight, that might be it, but maybe not. I don't know. Anyway, so he meets Brian Yuzna, who will go on to produce his films, and they start talking about, I'm just going to frame this like it was Brian Yuzna and Stuart Gordon, because I don't really remember who it was, but it would make sense if it was Brian Yuzna, so let's just do it that way. So he was discussing zombie movies with him, and how like Frankenstein was like the first zombie movie, and he was saying there should be more, I mean, at the time there weren't a lot of zombie movies coming out. It's not like now, where every other thing is a zombie thing. So they're saying like, what would, you know, what was the first zombie stuff, and Brian Yuzna brings up Herbert West Reanimator. And then, so Stuart Gordon loves Lovecraft. He had read him all the time when he was a kid, but he hadn't in many years, and he in all his Lovecraft time, he had never gotten around to reading Herbert West Reanimator, so he goes back and he reads it and decides he wants to make that. So, and originally he wanted to make it a television series for PBS, so that's where he meets Jeffrey Combs, who plays Herbert West. He meets him through PBS. Then they decide that they're going to, it's not going to fly as a public broadcast show. Yeah, it's not going to work. So they then try to get it produced through Stuart Gordon's theater company with a bunch of fancy pantses, and they're like, this is this goofy horror movie, we're not doing it. So he's like, I'll do it myself, whatever, whatever, whatever. And yeah, so then they, to make the movie, the first movie, wait, which movie? Oh, Herbert West Reanimator. They took everybody to the morgue so they could see dead bodies and stuff. And allegedly, the gallows humor that you see starting in Reanimator and going through to Dagon from beyond started because of the what do you call those people? Not the morticians. What do you call those fucks?
Undertaker?
No. The pathologist. I was trying to think of the fancy thing. Okay, yeah, the pathologist.
Yeah, they probably had.
They were goofy. They were very silly, apparently. So that's where they got the idea that this could also be funny, and they should try that angle. And that would influence the rest of his films. And it won the Critics' Prize at Cannes, which is kind of surprising. If you've seen Reanimator, picturing it winning a prize at Cannes is just odd. I can't really picture the environment in which that would have taken place.
What award?
The Cannes Film Festival Prize, the won the Critics' Prize, which is even weirder because, you know, critics
right,
are usually
it's sort
like,
of a strange...
It's goofy, silly, it's campy. Like, you wouldn't expect that at all. But it received a three-picture deal that forced him to, what's that guy? De Laurentiis, the guy who worked with David Lynch, who worked with a lot of people. De Laurentiis is a weirdo. He moved him to Italy. So the next few films will be produced in Italy, including the two films that we're going to talk about today. And, yeah. So, yeah. And I believe his next film, the first one made in Italy, was From Beyond, which is the first one we're going to talk about. And 1986, Stuart Gordon. He's a beautiful man.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I don't know. There's a few things that are interesting about this movie. For instance, he was scolded by the MPAA, apparently.
For what?
For the eye-sucking scene.
Oh, oh yeah. Not the dominatrix? Not the dominatrix
that
stuff?
That, too. Some of that was cut, too, yeah.
Yeah.
The dominatrix stuff, definitely, they cut. They had to. I saw the director's cut, so I saw all the eye-sucking in its eye-sucking glory, but apparently in the earlier
that much edits, of it, but...
Apparently, like, you know how, like, it zooms in? Like, there's the eye sucking, but then it zooms into the gaping hole of her eye.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, that was cut in the original theatrical cut of the film.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Huh. And then it was...
You can't show gape in films.
They don't like gape. Mm-hmm. No. Well, they wanted to give him probably an X rating, because that's how it used to be. It used to be, you either get... If you don't get the R rating, you get the X rating, you get zero distribution, your film is fucked.
Right.
And that's the end of it for
well,
you.
Well, apparently they didn't get much anyways, because they lost out on like $3 million or something.
Well, you hear stories like John Carpenter, like when he recut, when he had to meet the MPAA to do Assault on Precinct 13, they had the scene where the girl gets run over by the car. They told him he had to cut scenes. He agreed to cut it, took it back, and then handed it back without cutting anything, and they were like, oh, good, thank you. And that was it.
The thing is, though, it's like today that would be totally fine.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what, getting a kid killed for
the eye sucking?
No, the eye sucking.
Oh, any of it, yeah, definitely.
Or all of it, yeah.
Completely different standards now. But also, you have.
What standards?
Like the MPAA standards.
Exactly.
There's a movie, was I talking with you about that? Yeah. There's a documentary about the MPAA. They hire these the private detective to figure out who they are. They're all like these just old fucks, just these old, like.
Ex-parent types.
Yeah, Christians who are just like, you know, assholes, basically.
Right, what were the two movies that they focused on that they really didn't like?
Hmm?
What was the movies that they really didn't like?
I don't remember from that time. I haven't seen that in forever.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's five...
There's something tame.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that transgender movie?
The Crying Game?
Yeah, maybe.
Which is probably The Crying Game.
Yeah.
I want to say. it was an artisan. Remember in the 90s we had artisan pictures, which was like just anything artsy, and you knew it was because it had art in the name. So like the Crying Game. And there was like Miramax was like the Disney's art house bullshit, and their Dimension was their horror film outlet, which released a lot of
like fun stuff.
You know, yeah, the Crying Game. But yeah, also another MPAA anecdote, Trey Parker and Matt Stone. Originally, Bigger, Longer, Uncut was supposed to be called South Park, All Hell Breaks Loose, and the MPAA said no. They said, okay, we'll change it then. They changed it to Bigger, Longer, Uncut. The MPAA was fine with that. So they can be tricked.
All Hell Breaks Loose?
Yeah, that was the original title, All Hell Breaks Loose. That's what they were so offended by.
What?
Well, they're just old, confused white people. And it seems like...
But it's like not even that long ago.
That was like
95, 96, 98 probably.
Yeah. Oh, 98?
Yeah, around there.
Yeah. That's been around for...
Have you watched the new season of South Park? Are you watching that?
I've seen two of them, I think.
I've seen none of them.
They brought back a lot of old characters.
Towley, right? No?
And Towley? Mr. Hankey? Satan?
What about Man-Bear Pig?
Man-Bear Pig?
Man-Bear Pig. Al Gore?
And Al Gore.
Of course.
And Al Gore's, oh man.
Super serious.
Anyway, let's not get into that.
We're getting sidetracked.
That'll be quite a tangent to get onto.
Okay,
be the South Park episode.
Right.
Oh, so about the director's cut, apparently that footage that was cut was originally lost, but someone found it on like the floor of like the old cutting room, and they gave it back to him. Because he was looking for
it. How long was it lost for?
20 years.
It was still on the floor?
Yep. Trust me, that's not what happened. What I remember really happened was, it was just like filed away somewhere, right. You know. But you know, you hear the phrase on the cutting room floor. I was going for that dynamic. But you forced me out of it.
So. You ruined it.
You fucking ruined it.
No, you ruined it, Pat. Your delivery, awful.
Oh, all right.
It's just,
I hear voices. I hear voices.
Yeah, it's downstairs.
Okay.
We should get that checked out.
Wait, it's downstairs.
Downstairs. Do you have neighbors now?
Yeah. Steve's down there listening to something, probably.
Listen to NPR.
He's not down there.
Yeah.
Oh, he's down there, all right. Mm-hmm. Anyway, From Beyond was shot in Italy with an Italian crew in order to save money. Gordon says that the film would have cost $15 million to make in the United States, whereas in the foreign production enabled him to hold cost to approximately $2.5 million. It's pretty cheap. For a movie like that with all those crazy special effects.
That's true. They were pretty good special effects for the time.
There was a lot of good practical effects. Not bad. Pretty amazing.
I like the is it bad that movie made me hungry over and over again? Like those little flying phantom eel things. I was like, ooh, they're probably delicious.
Third dimensional or sixth dimensional phantom eel.
Mm-hmm.
They did not appeal to me on that level.
Oh. I thought the big one in the basement was cool. The big
the big sucker, the big wormy thing that sucks up Herbert. Not Herbert.
Oh yeah, he sucks him up and he comes out all hairless.
Yeah. Yep, he comes out nice and hairless. You play Crawford Tillinghast, not Herbert West, even though they're essentially the same character to me.
Yeah.
Of course, Herbert West was more menacing.
Herbert West is Reanimator.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the actor's name?
That's Jeffrey Combs. And of course, Barbara Crampton is in this movie, as well as Herbert West, Reanimator. And
there's Barbaras and other people with their same names, too, in both these movies.
Oh.
Barbara, that's the guy's name, and.
Barbara.
Or the girl's. The girl.
Oh, yeah, the girl in Dagon.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, that makes sense. Maybe they're
having fun.
We're having a little fun with that.
Mm-hmm.
A little Barbara Crampton esque. A little Barbara Cramptonite. Barbara Crampton's she's a beautiful lady, beautiful woman. She's good in this. She's a doctor. She's the doctor. What?
She's got nice stuff.
She's got nice business. She dresses, she gets all turned on by the machine, because apparently if you stimulate the pineal gland, you get super horn out of nowhere.
It's actually a reference for the prostate gland, I'm convinced.
Oh, well, I mean, there is a pineal gland, and it does produce something similar to DMT, allegedly. Right. Which is, you know, I think that's where they're going with this movie. Other dimensions, you know?
Another dimension.
You're going to go to another dimension.
All the pretty colors.
All
the red and
cool
blues.
Red and blue and the vibrating noise whistles. And the fucking... The introduction of this movie is pretty sweet with the fat lady and the dog and the... Yeah, maggot. I don't know. What are you talking about, maggots?
During the opening credits, there's a bunch of maggots in the background.
Oh.
But the dog, yeah, the dog, I was rooting for that dog to be Eaton Edward.
Eaton Edward style, yeah. Mm-hmm. Dr. Pretorius. Mm-hmm.
He's a cool name.
He was a weird guy. He liked to get weird.
So the eye, my favorite part probably is one of my favorite, just the imagery is with the eye coming out.
Oh yeah.
The pineal gland.
Like the
popping
out. Super duper pineal gland.
Yeah, it's very unsettling.
And he's like, ooh.
Oh, so horny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's horny, like hungry. He's like,
it's like a boner. It's supposed to be like a boner.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's getting all hard and it's popping out of there. It's like a long, skinny boner just floating around in space.
Oh, I don't know. I thought I read that they didn't like the pineal biting scene either.
Oh, and he bites off the pineal. It's very castration style. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I got that.
I thought I read that they didn't like that and they cut it.
Well, I liked it. Maybe they did cut it from the original version. It was in the one I saw. It was in the director's cut, so.
That's weird. I mean, it's not like it's a real appendage.
But it, you know. It's a reference.
It's very penile-like.
It's peeny.
Sort of.
Kind of peeny.
Phallic-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a dick on your head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a dick on your head.
Don't bite my head,
it's
dick.
It's like when you get like one of them head suction cups to build those. Dick. Put it on your forehead.
Don't bite my head dick off. Stop it.
You wouldn't
stop it.
You wouldn't want that.
No,
you wouldn't.
It's just rude.
It's a rude thing to do. It's not nice.
Also, not treating mental patients in the 80s was pretty rude.
Yeah, this guy just, when she walks in, it was this very Silence of the Lambs scene where she walks in, she to make sure to check out every mental patient she can, and the one guy's just beaten off.
Yep.
And I expected someone to throw shit at her because I remembered that, but maybe that was just Silence of the Lambs, I guess.
Well, he throws cum at her in Silence of the Lambs.
Is it cum?
Yeah.
I thought it was shit.
Is it?
Could have been a mix.
Let us know. Write a review.
Write a review. We want to know, was it piss or was it shit or was it cum? It was one of the three or all three. We want to know which it was. Include pictures if you must. Piss, shit, cum,
blood.
Mixture, blood.
Mung.
Gaunch.
Wait, mung?
Mung.
What's that?
That's meh. Do I need to explain it?
I mean, I've heard of it. I just don't know.
I'll tell you when you're older.
I've heard of it. Thank you. Pretty sure. I think I knew it one time. Anyways, mucus?
Yeah, any of these things. It could have been.
Bile?
Mm-hmm.
Bile? It's also another...
Bile.
Mix all these together.
It's a fluid. Yeah, bile. Stomach acids and so forth. Yes, sir. So anyway, the Dinasita, which was Dino De Laurentiis' film company, it was seized by the government for non-payment of taxes and sold to Empire Studios, which I don't think Empire released this, though. I think, okay, so...
When was
I think,
that? Was
I want
that...
to say it was New Line released this.
Was that after this movie?
I think it was...
It says it was distributed by Empire on here.
Okay, so it was sold to Empire, and then it was distributed by Empire. Okay, but not, you know, De Laurentiis's, because it was seized from the Italy's. So, yeah. It was... So Gordon shot his film Dolls at the same time? Oh, yeah, Dolls was shot simultaneously as From Beyond. Have you ever seen Dolls?
No.
I don't know if I've ever seen Dolls. I just remember seeing it in the video store.
Wait, what is that?
It's really creepy. It's another Stuart Gordon picture.
Oh, okay.
It's just like Living Dolls. I don't know. The classic...
Like Toy Story.
Dolls. Like, exactly like Toy Story 3. Completely menacing and unsettling. And there's that scene of Toy Story 3 at the end where they all accept their own death and hold hands and go into the fire together.
Hmm.
That's pretty good.
Did that happen?
Well, they don't go. Yeah, I think fire. So. They almost do. They all just hold hands and accept their own death. Yeah, it's Toy Story 3.
I think there's fourth one coming out, at least.
In the mix. In the mix.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, probably. Okay, according to Gordon, securing an R rating from the MPAA was a challenging ordeal. He quotes them as initially saying he presented a cut of the film with 10 times too much of everything. He was ultimately able to get away with making small trims without removing any entire sequences from the film. We talked about that earlier, but small trims, I don't know. I guess the couple of seconds that it took to pan into that eyeball. But, and also...
Or where did the black dude come from? He was just, all of a sudden, he was there.
Well, he was,
what do you mean?
He was guarded.
He was
they
the
assigned
cop.
Him, yeah, he was a cop. Detective a cop. Type guy. He was assigned to protect or you know,
protect
watch
her from the from what's his name?
Yeah,
Crawford.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Because
okay,
it was a silly arrangement to begin with. I mean,
well, yeah, he was assigned. Yeah.
Right. He was like,
they thought he was a murderer.
Yeah, Dr. Catherine McMichaels wants to take him back to simulate the experiment.
Hey, can you...
Okay, so the Resonator. Let's talk about that. Resonator.
It resonates.
Yeah, it does resonate. Let's move on. Cool.
But it it resonates in your brain. Was your brainy works.
It stimulates the pineal gland, makes it all hard. It makes it all
right. So the first time,
it makes it all DMT-like.
Yeah, there's DMT the monsters life. That are there all the time, but then you create this field, and it can interact.
Yeah, you can. They can see you, and you can see them.
So the first time he turned it on, like only one of the little tuning forks was vibrating.
Right, that's kind of cool.
It was just like a small field, but then they never went lower again.
You know what?
It's kind of dumb, like. Oh, so he comes back after this fucking terrible thing happened, and he's just like, well, let's just turn it all the way up again.
Pump it up. Pump up the volume.
Why wouldn't you just, like, 11. Turn up one? Pump Look, it. Here's these fucking crazy things. Mm. Now let's turn it off.
Yeah.
Everything would have been fine if they had just...
Well, up to a point, but then later in the movie, when they cut all the cords start, like, going through things to get to each other and attaching to one another so they can turn on the machine themselves.
Yeah.
It's turning itself on! That's what he says.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but...
And cords don't have pineal glands.
They kind of are pineal glands.
But yeah, if he had just gone for the one switch, you know.
Flawless
victory.
Like, the doctor probably would have been seduced by it.
Did you ever consider that his personality, he's like, once he like goes up to like a certain level of something, he's like, I can't go down.
Right, that's what I thought. That's what I think happened.
He's probably just, you know.
Especially Dr. Are we talking about Dr. Pretorius?
No,
because he's the one. I mean, Dr. Pretorius was pretty fucked up to begin with.
But he died.
He did die.
No, we're talking about Tillinghast.
Tillinghast. Crawford. Crawford Tillinghast.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he might have been fucked up too. Who knows?
I mean, he was just trying to prove the exact scenario that he went through.
I like the sexual tension between Tillinghast and McMasters or whatever her name is. McMassifin? McMichaels. That's it. Dr. McMichaels. Because when they turn on the machine, they're all looking in each other's eyes all longingly. They're like super about to bone because they're tripping.
The machine doesn't even have to be on for that to happen.
No, it didn't later. She gets in a mirror and she's putting on all of the leather gear she finds in Dr. Pretorius's office. And when he's all bald and looking real good because he don't got no hair up top or on his eyebrows or anything.
Rapes him.
And he's got a bulbous forehead. She straight rips him.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty cool.
Sleep rape.
Sleep rape. Still rape.
Does it explain this hard-on I've had?
Yeah.
Says the detective.
I feel like he's just trying to get down the whole time. He's like, why is nobody throwing me around in his underwear? Yeah, I know.
What are you talking about?
The black dude. What's his Sergeant name? What's Dick his name? Man. I don't know. Ted, maybe? I don't know. No, it's not. It's, Ken Forey. Ken Forey, I guess.
Yeah, Bubba.
Bubba Brownlee. That's what his name is. Who fucking came up with Bubba Brownlee?
That's a great name.
Of course it is.
Wait, he said that at one point? He's like, "Why? That's why I've had this
on?" They're like, because he's trying to explain it scientifically. He's like, that's why it stimulates sexual arousal. He's like, does that explain the hard-on I got? And they're like, but nobody wants your hard-on, dude. That's why I feel bad for him because the whole time, because he's just walking around with a hard-on in his underpants, just trying to get some love from Dr. McMichaels, and she just only wants the little ratty little...
Or Tillinghast. And he doesn't seem to mind.
Tillinghast might be down with that. He's very obscure and ambiguous. It's weird. His relationship with Pretorius is kind of weird.
It is kind of weird.
He says he's like, he would bring women.
This is his slave.
It would end in screams, and I would just sit there and listen. It's like, well, you should have left. Go to a bar or something. Or, like, turn up the TV. Or, like, just stop putting your ears
to
the
door. Stop being so beta.
You don't know that, though. Maybe Pretorius was like, you're going to stay in this lab, and you're going to fucking do this lab work. And then he's like, I'm going to go over here, but you're staying in this lab. Or maybe that's Pretorius' thing.
Maybe it is. I'm sure it was. His little alpha
I'm just
beta.
Throwing it out. I don't know.
I think it must have helped. More than just throwing it. It's out. It's definitely. I think it's there, man.
Okay.
I think Dr. Tillinghast has a little bit of a... He's a beta. He's a beta. Can we also call him a bottom? I don't know the lingo. He's a cuck? I think he has a cuck fetish.
Mm-hmm.
A cuck fetish.
Taking all his women.
He wants, he says, you do these. Maybe that's why he's uncomfortable with McMichaels a little bit. Because he's hoping, wishing the whole time that Bubba would just, he's like, Bubba, can you handle this bitch for me so I can go in the corner and do my thing? She's like, she's all over my D. I'm not comfortable with ladies touching me. Just, can you just get in there? And Bubba's trying to help, and McMichaels isn't having any of that. Because she's not comfortable with Bubba's big man brownie.
Mm-hmm. They do like end up like making out, right? At least at the very least.
Yeah, they make out at some, and then she mounts him while they're in the bed.
Right, and then she rapes him. But
there's a, I mean, the rape.
That's not like a mutual thing.
Yeah, well, you know, well, he's a beta. We did. God, I don't want to get weird here. I'm just saying maybe there was. I don't know.
Well, he gets like a little bit more alpha-ish when the pineal gland is.
Yeah, pineal alpha.
Right.
Right.
I mean, he's sucking eyes and shit, you know?
That's right. That's alpha. That's alpha stuff right there.
Definitely.
You don't see beta
status.
Sucking out eyes.
No.
All that pent up sexual frustration all those years, he's like, I'm going to suck out some eyes. Another cool scene was the brain eating scene where they walk in, he's just like, so delicious. It's like he's just eating Kentucky Fried Chicken out of the bucket.
It's yeah, that's great. Yeah, it's great. And then, yeah, that, so then that, there's that doctor, and then, like the bitch.
The cunt doctor.
Yeah, Dr. Cunt. Exactly.
Dr. Cunt. There's always one.
It was pretty, like, so when they bring the one, I mean, I guess it's like, it's just a kind of a trope or something, you know, but then.
Dr. Block.
What was her name? Fucking Blockhead.
Yeah.
But it's like a trope or something, but it's like, so the, after they come back from the mansion or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and McMichaels is going on about some crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And then Dr.
Block.
Bach?
Block?
Block.
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 Dr. Block.
Dr. Blockhead.
It's a weird name. She's like, oh, look, she's crazy too. Yeah. All right, let's do some electroshock therapy.
I know, yeah. She's like a very like brutal really... doctor. And she's scary.
That's
yeah.
scary.
She's one of those doctors, because that can happen. You can just be thrown in, into the mix.
Yeah. She was just,
you know, they
so eager to do some electroshock therapy.
Oh, she was,
you know? She's
oh,
like,
yeah. She was, it was petty revenge. I mean, there was the beginning yeah. scene where like, she was like, I don't agree with locking people up. She's like, well, I don't agree with using people in your experiments. You're exploiting. I'm not exploiting. Yeah. You know, so it was petty revenge, really.
Very catty.
Very catty. Very catty. Get it together, girls.
The actress did play, who played her, she did a good job in just being a fucking unlikable.
You know what's interesting about that actress, though? That's Stuart Gordon's wife, Dr. Block. That's Carolyn. What's her name?
Wait,
Carolyn Purdy. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's,
her name is Carolyn Purdy Gordon.
Oh, okay.
She's really? Stuart Gordon's wife. She was actually when I mentioned earlier the new dancing scene that got them arrested. She was one of the new dancers. And they got married after that.
Oh, okay. Because
he claims that getting arrested together cemented their relationship.
Oh, that's cool.
Aww.
Yeah, it's lovely. It's a lovely story.
Huh.
Cool. Take a little acid, get a little nude, do a little play, make some movies.
In front of everyone.
In front of everybody. He's an exhibitionist. That's Stuart Gordon. Have you seen Stuart Gordon? He looks kind of like a troll.
Does he? Ew.
Well, I mean, not in a bad
like,
way.
Oh, like in a Danny DeVito way?
Let's look
no.
at him right now.
Look at him right now. Everyone, get your screens up. Get your devices. Type in Stuart
Hands
Gordon.
Down, screens up.
That's right. When I back this thing up. Okay, yep, there he is. There's Stuart Gordon, all right.
Wait, that's him?
That's him? There's a young Stuart Gordon. Looks exactly the same, except his hair is black instead of gray.
Oh. Huh, yeah.
Yeah, it's very...
He actually looks relatively normal.
I just see him as like a trolly kind of like D&D character kind of
mm-hmm.
guy vibe.
Like
he's clearly a nerd. He likes Lovecraft. I mean, if you like Lovecraft, you are a nerd. Mm-hmm. There's no mistaking.
He looks fine.
All right, well, I think he looks like a troll.
But Andy thinks he's
oh,
fine.
He thinks like
he's
an so actual fine. Troll.
Not like an internet troll.
Yeah, he looks
a
like
trollish...
an like a D&D troll.
Yeah.
A fantasy
kind of
troll.
Block,
no, see,
yeah.
I thought you meant an internet. Like he looks like an internet troll.
He looks
troll.
Like a neckbeard.
Which
I'm
which,
not that.
An internet troll is like that. That's just a range of things that
yeah,
you
it could
possibly
be a
look at. Or look like.
Beard,
so, but I would just assume he'd be like he looks like a fucking. He looks weird. He looks kind of like a trolley or something.
No,
like,
no.
You
I would say
he looks like.
I would have said geek or something if that's what I meant, or like basement dweller.
Okay.
I strictly use troll to describe trolls.
All right. Well, now I know that.
Okay. I'm just not that hip on the internet. I don't understand
so
what the internet is.
That scene when they go back and Bubba dies.
Oh, Bubba, don't die.
Yeah,
that Bubba made died. Me really sad. I really didn't want Bubba to die.
Spoiler.
Bubba
yeah,
died. Bubba.
Yeah, I was just...
What was...
Yeah.
Were those, like,
the
bees?
Bugs?
Oh, yeah, that was really cool.
Bees!
disease.
Huh?
Those pussy things.
Well,
like,
I thought it was weird. I thought it was weird that, like, they were, like, fucking swarming the doctor, all the two doctors, like, Tillinghast and McMasters.
Because it was something to do with the light, because he takes like, the light and he shines it on
them. They were swarming the fuck out of him for, like, 2 minutes, and then he runs upstairs and he's like, oh, I'll get him off them, and then he's, like, devoured in seconds.
Yeah, but that's because the thing was, because when he shined the light, it turned out it had something to do with the light, but when he put the light directly on something, they swarmed extra thick, and then he dropped his flashlight, and it went on him, and he's like, oh, no, it's on me, and he doesn't think to move for some reason.
Right.
It was weird.
But he did manage to...
He did get eaten up
pretty
quick.
Yeah.
That was actually kind of sweet.
Yeah.
Sweet piranha style.
That's piranha style.
Oh, maybe there was just a little tiny piranha. Like,
quick, break the machine. They spray the fire extinguisher at it.
Because fire extinguishers solve all your problems. If it is an 80s horror or sci-fi film, all you need is a fire extinguisher. That's
it. Blind it.
Good.
Blind it, moisten it.
Oh, yeah. I like how they sprayed it once, and then it kind of dripped a little, and then it started working again. They're like, just get it one more time, it'll kill it. And it did.
Yeah.
You're right. But they didn't think was smashing it after?
Like, wait.
Smashy, yeah, smashy.
Wait. According to this, this movie only made $1.2 million.
Yeah.
Didn't even make its money back.
And the budget was 4.5.
I thought it was 3.2 or something.
Wiki says 4.5.
Well, I'm talking, speaking from an interview, so I don't know. There might be a discrepancy
that's
there.
Awful.
Well, that happens far more
that
than
was
you
like,
think.
Just this is from the 80s. We remember with the 50s movies where they made more
money. I mean, everybody loses money on movies. I mean, not just Stuart Gordon. I mean, fucking, what's his face? Orson Welles has lost lots of money on different movies, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Touch of Evil, which was amazing.
We've just happened to be only covering movies that everyone apparently liked.
Mm-hmm. Well, we definitely covered some movies that didn't make a ton of money. But
right.
And, or some that didn't make any, or the some that are negative, like this one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think the thing is like, Reanimator was kind of a lightning in the bottle situation,
mm-hmm.
and he kept doing it for the next 20 years, and yeah, it's not gonna, it just doesn't fit quite right.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie is not as quite as, like, funny, or there's something about Reanimator that's very, gets under your skin,
mm-hmm.
and the silliness is, like, perfectly executed. Here, the silliness is like not.
It's
not.
Really, I don't
much
think
there.
You're right. I don't think they purpose the parts that were silly. I didn't think were intentional.
Yeah. I mean, you know. I mean, God bless Barbara Crampton, but you know, so the acting in this movie wasn't great.
Mm-hmm.
This wasn't great acting. Mm-hmm. I think we'll run into that a little more later in the episode.
Oh yes.
But yeah. But overall, it's a fun movie. It's fun. It's a lot of fun to watch.
It was fun.
Practical effects are really
fun.
Mm-hmm. I like the violence, the sex. I like the house. I like the setting.
Well, yeah, mm-hmm. with Pretorius, his whole thing, like, he's coming back, you know, he's from beyond, and he's all weird, and he's got this new, like, outlook on reality.
He's got a new attitude.
He's trying to, like...
Yeah.
He's trying to be cool.
He's trying to hook up.
Humans are such easy prey.
Yeah.
That's his catchphrase or something.
But it's also because he comes back, he's like a... Because he's more... Because he was in the BDSM stuff, so more... It's
he's
like...
It, scene, man.
It's pushed him further in that direction.
Yeah. It's a lot of... Very similar to Hellraiser.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it.
There's a lot of similarities between future movies and this one. The brain eating and the whole pineal gland deal.
Oh, what's
this
the movie that has
like
the pineal
relic.
Gland? Relic?
Relic, where that
relic?
Beast is
the pineal
eating,
gland? I remember
it's
relic.
Eating the hypothalamus and the pineal gland.
Wait, oh, fascinating. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember the Relic. They get it's like a bug creature, isn't it? I think you might be thinking of Mimic, because Mimic and Relic came out at the same time.
I think of Mimic.
I watched both and liked both at the time.
Wait, what's Relic?
Relic is the one where there's this beast loose in some sort of
museum. Yeah, they get this, like, they get a relic.
Oh!
And then it turns into a beast. Very Lovecraftian.
Mm-hmm.
As anything, Mimic was sort of Lovecraftian, too, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Wait, because Mimic was in a museum, too.
Was it?
Was it?
I can't remember.
I don't know.
I remember that Mia Sorvino
was
in it. That's all I remember.
All right.
Is that squat little old lady?
No, Mia was a blonde. She was in Summer of Sam. She was in Romeo and Michelle's High School Reunion. She was a lady. That was in movies, but isn't anymore.
Cute little blonde girl.
She's a very cute little blonde girl.
Who?
She was also in Mighty Aphrodite.
She was also in, like, a Three Musketeers movie.
There you go.
And something, like, really big.
Wow, you guys are good at remembering actresses.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You should see my scrapbooks.
You're a scrapper?
What? No. What are you talking? Nothing. So, yeah.
Barbara Crampton, on the similar note, is very cute and blonde, and she's on Twitter. We are as a group following her on Twitter, not too closely, nothing creepy about it.
Who?
Barbara Crampton.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Does she tweet?
She tweets. She be tweeting. We be retweeting. That's how we do it. That's how we show affection. That's how you establish a relationship.
Oh, in this movie, the dog's name is Barbara.
Barbara.
The neighbor's dog's name is Barbara.
I wonder
Barbara.
If they just didn't like Barbara Crampton for some reason. I don't know. They named the dog, we're naming the dog Barbara. I don't know. I'll tell you about Barbara Crampton. Before Reanimator, I know she's nude in this, and she's nude in Reanimator, but before this, that was kind of her thing. She was just nude in things. She was like that girl you hire, and she's nude in your movie. Like, I'm trying to remember one. There's one, like, there's a couple. It's like Tim Robbins, and he's going on a vacation. Right. Fraternity. It's like all like frat boys or something.
She doesn't have to be great. She just has to get naked.
Yeah. But then I think, you know, Reanimator in this, she showed she had some sort of acting ability outside of being nude. You know. So it's like, some, yeah.
It's like Japanese actresses trying to make it big.
I've always kind of thought about
like
that. Like,
perfect blue.
If you like, thing. If you like start out that way, like, it's kind of expected.
Right.
You know, if you kind of like.
You know, I found
like
out,
your first big picture, and you're naked, and then like, you're getting
naked in this, right?
Do it again, right?
Yeah. Why don't you do the slow play? You know, you do the slow play. You're like, I'll never get naked. Then you show one nipple, you know. Then you show
side
two.
Nip.
Then you know. Now you got like things like the fappening, you know. So you can say like, you know, you can be like, I'm not nude, but then you can just secretly post photos of yourself on the internet, like some people I know, and just be like, oh, I'm being exploited, you know.
Why are you looking at me?
I'm not looking at you.
Because you're the only one of us would dare post naked photos of yourself.
I would dare post
naked photos.
I posted naked photos of Mark, so I don't know what you're talking about.
You guys know this for a fact?
Moving on. I was going to mention somebody else, but never mind.
Somebody else?
Huh? Yeah. Huh? I don't know, somebody. The girl. It was in the vein of, like, you start being nude,
oh,
and then
okay.
It's expected.
Hey, here, Demi Moore. It's a good example of that. Start out in Penthouse, you know? Then she's Nothing But Trouble, you know? I was just watching a thing about Nothing But Trouble.
I was thinking of the girl, the girl from Shameless, I think. Emmy Rosmum.
Her, yeah.
Oh, everybody's naked in that.
That's well, they're
yeah.
Shameless. That's
well, yeah.
The whole point.
So,
oh, God.
Thank God, no shame in that show.
So she's in a new movie that's coming out, or it is out, or something, and I'm just kind of wondering if she gets naked.
I'm thinking she does.
She has to.
Olivia Wilde right. Is always naked and stuff.
Is she?
I think so.
I'm not interested.
Me either. I don't know her. I don't want to know her. She can go to hell. So I think, yeah, I got sidetracked because of the nudes. But, yeah. You know, there's other things in the world today. Or not. Oh, the special effects were done by Jean-Carl Bouchier. I don't know how to say that. It looks like French, but he's probably not really French. Yeah, that's it. I don't know. That's it. That's all I really
want
to say about From Beyond. I don't really have a lot more to say. I thought it was good.
It was
a fun time. I liked the effects. The acting was silly.
Yeah, it was cool.
It was sort of like a fun, campy...
It was fun, campy, but not as well-executed as Reanimator.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, we can talk about the... I mean, I only vaguely remember the story of From Beyond, but I know this takes place at a sort of side step or further into the future from the story From Beyond.
Right. It's not necessarily like a tight H.P.
Yeah.
Lovecraft
same with
universe.
Reanimator.
I feel like From Beyond was one of the shorter stories.
Yeah, it was.
It was like...
Well, Reanimator's
only a couple
long.
Pages.
Reanimator was like done in installments.
So I think, God, it's been years since I've read it, but I think it was just, you know, he gets the machine to work, and then he tries it again, and it's like bad shit starts
There's
to happen.
Another story with tuning.
And
I don't
just,
even know
like,
if the From
crazy.
Beyond story has the tuning forks. I think it's another Lovecraft story that has the machine with the resonance and the tuning forks. And
I should have reread some of the books before.
The Lovecraft books?
Or some of the stories
always, every few years I reread the Lovecraft. I love the Lovecraft. Maybe we should just... delve into a little Lovecraft. I mean,
yeah,
you know.
My favorite one was the one I think it's called Beast in the Castle or Beast
oh, you
in the
mean,
Mirror.
I know what you mean. It's called
like
the Outsider.
Yeah,
the
he's
outsider.
Like climbing up the castle.
He's a beast. He doesn't know he's a beast. It's one of those things, and he sees himself in the mirror and he realizes that they were all running from him.
Mm-hmm.
It's a classic spin around, turn around.
So my My favorite short story was the Dream Quest of the Unknown Kadath.
The Unknown Kadath.
But I really liked Lurker at the Threshold,
that
too.
That was a good one. That was done in tandem with August Derleth, another...
Oh, she's part of it.
I say she, but I always say she, but it's not. It's a guy. Yeah. August Derleth. I always think it's, for some reason, it always pops out as a lady, because it sounds like a lady name. But anyway, he's part of the, like, to extend the Lovecraft mythos, there was a group of people who got down on that. And then there were other people who are existing, coexisting alongside Howard Phillips Lovecraft, like Robert E. Howard, who did Conan, also uses some of the same monsters, and Clark Ashton Smith. It's great. A lot of, like, sorcery stuff, you know, really cool. So and they have an interesting dynamic as three people. You have Howard Lovecraft, who's a total just, like, shut-in weirdo, nerd, xenophobe freak, great writer, of course. But then again, sort of over-explanatory, too much exposition sometimes, but I like that about him. You know, it's quirky, it's good. But then you have Robert E. Howard, who's, like, obsessed with his mother, and is also, like, his mother, like, wouldn't let him get married to some girl, and then his mother killed herself, and then Robert E. Howard killed himself because he said, my life is over, after his mother died, and went into his car and shot himself in the head. But I like Clark Ashton Smith as the third friend, because he's just a straight-up playboy, and he could give a fuck about any of this shit. Like, he wrote poems, he wrote shit just to get laid, basically, and, like, he's just a suave motherfucker. With these hanging out with these two dorks. I mean, they didn't really hang out, but in my mind, they hung out. They were pen pals, really. Yeah. And they all wrote for, like, weird tales and shit. But in my mind, I see them as, like, a sitcom trio, you know?
You think we could do that? We could make a sitcom.
Oh, I've already written.
Of them.
I have already written outlines. Seriously? For a sitcom with these three people.
Really?
As friends, yes. Well,
what's it called?
In Lovecraft. Just Lovecraft.
Okay.
Just because Lovecraft goes missing. That's the idea. And Robert E. Howard and Clark Ashton Smith have to go find him because the ants proposition them to go look. And they have to go to India, find Abdul Alhazred's text and all this shit, you know, the Necronomicon, all this shit. And then you find out, like, you know, and they're obviously all studying fake things, but they're real in the show. Like, Sumeria is, like, real, and, like,
the Hyperborea
and all that is real. Like, so instead of, like, being in the show, they're all, like, anthropologists instead of authors, because they're all real. In the canon of the show, these would all be real places and real events. So, yeah.
Neat.
So this is recorded, so if anyone takes it from me, taking your ass to court.
Word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, he's got it. You guys can take it. I mean, anybody out there and... listener land, you do this and you're fucking dead.
I'm gonna show up at your house
financially.
If you're financially dead, I will financially fucking murder you. I will. Your kids, yeah, you know, they're
they'll
not
be homeless.
They will be homeless. Sorry to say. And kids don't make it very long on the streets, brother. Anyway, so
want to move on?
Yeah, we can move on. I just want to say one interesting thing about the interim between From Beyond and Dagon. So, the next film that Stuart Gordon was going to work on with Brian Yuzna, he actually was hired to make this film by Disney, was Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. He wrote it. He did all the storyboards. He did all the setup work for it. He even started directing it, and then he had some kind of, like, health crisis. Like, he started having, like, almost heart palpitations or something, and they ended up taking him off. So he didn't get to make Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, and he ended up making another, like, Pit in the Pendulum or some shit, another one of these, like, schlocky horror movies. So in his mind, that would have changed his career, but for some reason he, like, had a meltdown and didn't end up directing it. But according to him, it's like the final product was, like, 70% stuff that was his idea.
That he did?
Yeah.
Wow.
So he was, like, that close to being, like, considered a...
A real
Hollywood filmmaker. And he had an interesting run-in with, like, Steven Spielberg was actually the one who wanted him to do this, to do Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Like, Spielberg saw Reanimator and approached him, and because, like, at some point, you know, Spielberg was just, like, trying to help everybody make movies that he didn't want to make, essentially. And so I think the thing with Stuart Gordon thought Spielberg was just throwing him a movie that he didn't want and wasn't going to do it, and then he decided he did want to do it, and then he couldn't do it. Something along those lines.
Cool.
Or I might be confusing two ideas. I don't know. Anyway, that was about it. So yeah.
All right.
He makes The Pit and the Pendulum, 1991. He makes Castle Freak, 1995, based on... I said The Color Out of Space in this paper. That's not correct. It's based on The Outsider. And he makes the Dentist and Space Truckers, both in 1996.
With Jim Carrey?
Yeah.
What? What do you
think? Or not Jim Carrey.
Space Truckers? I've never seen Space Truckers.
Am I thinking something else?
I don't know.
Or John Candy. What was that movie where they're
Spaceballs.
Like...
Spaceballs.
You're thinking of Spaceballs. Oh, yes. That was in the
80s. No, not Spaceballs. He also made a serious Hollywood film called Edmund and with William H. Macy where it's like... William. It's not, I don't know if it's Hollywood. But William H. Macy is like a guy who like kills his family or some shit.
Dig on. All right. So this is a Spanish movie, sort of. It was released in 2001. I guess the Spanish name is Dagon La Secta del Mar, which, with my limited Spanish, I'm assuming means the cult of the ocean? Jeff? La Secta del Mar?
Cult of the sea?
Del Mar's... Yeah. Anyway, so it was directed by Stuart Gordon and written by Dennis Paoli.
Paoli.
So it's not really the story of Dagon.
It's Shadow Over, right?
Yes. It's much more like the Shadow Over Ensmoth.
I always like that sequence in the Shadow Over Ensmoth where like they're coming to the hotel and he's like going between the doors. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just cool how he's like going from room to room and they're like coming closer and closer and he escapes and he jumps out the window. They did that in this movie and it's from the Shadow Over Ensmoth. It's a fucking sweet sequence.
So yeah, we were talking about budget before, and Andy was like aghast at how much money From Beyond made. So the numbers I'm finding for the budget on this movie are like $4.8 million, and it only made $150,000 like internationally in the box office.
Geez. Yeah.
Wait, so, in the box office. I mean, not
in the box office.
Then you have video.
No, this is straight video, right?
No.
No, was it?
Well, it was released in Spain.
Oh, okay.
It was released in 117 theaters.
Oh, okay.
And I think that was throughout Spain.
Oh, okay.
And it made less than $150,000, but then... Jeez. So I think it might have been released elsewhere.
Probably Italy,
in theaters,
I would think, because of maybe. De Laurentiis' involvement.
And made like another like $40,000. So it was less than $150,000 it was grossed at the box office. But then it was, you know, released on DVD by Lionsgate and Metrodome in 2002, and then later again in 2004. That's all I have to say on production.
Can I just say something interesting I found out about Dagon? Mm-hmm. I thought Dagon was part of the Lovecraft canon, the Cthulhu mythos, but apparently Dagon is an actual...
Right, it's a different one.
...deity. No, he's part of...
Oh,
like,
right. He's in the Bible.
God of grain.
Yeah, he's in the Bible.
Like
yeah, he's in the... I'll read it here. Dagon was an ancient Northwest Semitic god worshipped by the early Amorites. This sounds like Ghostbusters. And by the people of Ebla and Ugarit. He was also a major god, perhaps the chief god of the biblical Philistines.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, and it's the same thing. Like, he wasn't always a fish, but then he started getting associated with fish. And
yeah.
And, I think it was grains.
And the whole giving the riches and the gold and stuff, that was also one of these
bountiful
older stories.
Harvest. Huh.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So this is something Lovecraft borrowed. A lot of these things, Cthulhu, he just straight crafted.
Right, he's just like, blah, blah, blah. I like that.
And Yog-Sothoth and these types, you know, they sound made up. But Cthulhu, which is really interesting because supposedly you're not supposed to be able to pronounce Cthulhu in the human tongue. It's supposed to be like, Cthulhu.
Cthulhu.
Not even, but you're not supposed to be able to do it. It's supposed to, it's like Cthulhu, but you're not supposed to actually be able to, it's more like,
right.
You know?
Right, we don't have the mouth he works.
We don't have the mouth. You have to have like a fish throat to do it properly.
Right, so I mean, you don't need any more proof that this wasn't actually the Dagon story that, you know, they're worshipping Cthulhu. And
yeah, well, they are worshipping Dagon, too. Mm-hmm. They say what? Cthulhu for Dagon. Dagon is who comes to the, kills them in the boat initially. He kills the woman, the other woman.
How'd you get that?
Dagon is in it. Dagon is the deity that they worship, and they say it several times.
Yeah, Dagon's the high priest of Cthulhu.
He's who they're like, who gives them the gold.
He's the right. They do say that a bunch.
Yeah, Dagon is just the beast.
So why are they saying Cthulhu for Dagon?
I think it's just part of the same canon. I don't know.
Yeah. All right.
They're part of the same old. They're both old gods.
Probably right. The same pantheon.
The great old ones.
That's a good word for it.
they're part of the same pantheon of gods. Or pantheon.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah. So, yeah. I don't know.
So, the movie starts with an awful fucking yuppie white guy.
Yeah, he's got that horrible Brooklyn accent or something. He's just like, come on, guys, do we go gang? I don't know. It's just, it's really thick and really bad. I don't know if it's he's acting that or if that's just how this guy talks, but it's bad. Same actor
and
was
I
also
hate that woman.
Oh,
Barbara.
She, I think she's just a bad actress. I think that's what we're
yeah,
dealing with.
Yeah, she's really bad. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I mean, she had nice boobs.
Yeah,
so that's
what
she's unforgivable.
That's why she's in this movie
for throwing that laptop off the ship.
Yeah, that was.
I would have been like, oh, you're going too. Bye.
Yeah.
Go get it.
Yeah.
The fuck.
Oh, wow. I mean, also the same actor as the guy, the male actor, which I'll actually look up his name, not be such a lazy prick. Hold on.
While you're doing that, the movie actually starts with the dream, right?
Yeah.
Where he's swimming.
Under the sea.
Swimming under the sea.
Life will be better.
We need and he meets Ariel. And she, opens her jaw and eats his face.
Yeah. As you would. That's what you like. That's what you want. Mm-hmm. So yeah,
she had nice boobies too.
She did too. That's also how I think she may have gotten into this movie.
I think she's a more well-known Spanish actress.
I think you're right.
But
I think you're right.
I saw a recent picture of her today.
Her name is Macarena Gomez. Macarena Gomez.
I saw a recent picture of her today, and she looks awful.
She looks bad.
Like her, yeah.
She's maybe a lot of cocaine.
Yeah. Yep. That's kind of what I was saying.
A little rough you up after a while.
Yeah.
Too many underwater sequences.
Yeah. She got a little soggy. She got all pruney down there
for too long.
My fingers are all pruney. Yeah. That's definitely what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So after that,
they go to.
They crash the boat.
The boat
gets crashed.
There was that dumb older couple.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They were pretty dumb too.
Yeah. The lady gets her legs stuck mm-hmm. when the boat crashes apparently into Dagon or something.
Storm comes.
Yeah.
So.
Storm's coming.
Maybe Dagon.
Dagon probably did that.
Whips up a storm because he needs some sacrifices because they let you know later and because there hasn't been a sacrifice in a year.
Yeah, gotta have at least one a year.
Right. Why didn't they ever sacrifice the old guy there?
I think it was impure or something because he, drank too much. Something like that.
Hmm.
Well, God. I guess we'd all be safe.
Yeah.
Let's go to Mboka.
Mboka. Mm-hmm. Boka.
That would have been a great town if,
it could have been a great party town. Yeah.
If they had, power and wireless and stuff.
Yeah, people who are into the occult could go there and get wild. Like us.
So I heard, I read one review where they described the movie as, relentless.
Relentless?
And I kind of feel like that's a pretty good way to, because, it's like, oh, this terrible thing happens, and then it just, builds, and they're like, oh, nope, you can't help them this way, you gotta go this way, and it's like, oh, now you're in this shitty hotel, and, everything's fucking weird.
The hotel was really shitty.
And then, oh, all these fucking people are coming to get you, gotta jump out of the fucking window, and now you're in this fucking warehouse full of human skins.
That was fun.
Now you're being chased through the street.
By these.
Now you've got to go and try and steal this car, but the car doesn't fucking work. Now you got to break into the house because people have found you. It's just like.
This guy doesn't have great luck.
No, not at all. Runs into that one house into the woods, and it's like. But, it's like.
That little kid.
Knee deep in water, and there's a little kid, and,
mm-hmm.
and his dad comes.
I think it would.
Yeah, it'd be pretty creepy. When he does get the car fucking veers off the road.
I found out, skipping ahead a little bit, but... So, I'm probably going to do Call of Cthulhu, and I found out there's a video game of that was just released.
There's also a tabletop RPG of mm-hmm. Call of Cthulhu.
Oh.
A D20 game.
Yep.
On call.
Okay. Sounds pretty cool.
Sounds pretty cool.
I've
heard
really
it's good.
Looked into it, but
I looked into it a little
there's
bit.
There's a podcast that does an actual play podcast of it.
Oh,
I haven't listened to, but
right.
I'll think of the name of it soon.
I saw something on a board game, a Lovecraft board game, earlier.
I've seen one of these too. Oh man,
yeah.
Lovecraft.
I'll think of the name of that.
Penetrated
too.
The culture.
Mm-hmm.
It's too bad it didn't happen.
And who
the
fuck
alive.
Goes sailing on a sailboat?
Well, everybody.
Around, you gotta have a sailboat if you're gonna
around
sail.
Towns where you have no idea what they are.
Well, they were just sailing around the ocean,
man. They're rich people. They don't give a fuck.
Right.
That's what it seemed like to me, that there's
sailing around the ocean.
She's all psyched because she didn't have to do shit for the rest of her life. They saved a bunch of money.
You should, in general, be able to just sail around, like, not far off the coast. You could just, like, on boats like that.
Like, they're near Spain. They're in Spain, but they're near, like, Spain proper. Like, it's just a weird little town. Like, it's not an island.
That just seemed weird to me.
Yeah, it is weird. Also, Innsmouth, Inboka, Inmouth, Inmouth again.
Inboka.
Inboka.
Yeah.
We get it. It's good. Anyway, yeah. It's good. That's all.
It's good.
It's a good thing.
Good.
It's fine.
It's good.
I don't mind
it's
it.
Fine.
It's fine. I love right. it. It's great. Fuck it. But, so, yeah. So, the Barbara. Barbara's fucking weird. I don't know. I don't like Barbara.
Yeah, I hated her in the beginning, but then I realized she actually had some fucking skills, like fucking lockpicking and
doing
all that other stuff.
Yeah, what was her deal? Like, she's just like apparently a
street
kid.
Like, where did you find this crazy woman?
She's just probably a street kid, just like hustling her way through Spain. She meets this rich guy with a birch glass, and she's like, oh, you have monies? Let me check my titties at you. So, yeah, I'm sure that's how that happened. And she's all psyched that they're together because she doesn't have to work or be a street kid anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And she throws his laptop off the thing as if, like, that's going to help the situation. That's the money. That's the money. That's the gravy train. Bye-bye, mm-hmm. gravy train. And then everything goes to hell. So,
mm-hmm.
So had she not done that, I feel like this would have been a different movie.
Mm-hmm.
Or no movie at all.
Nope.
Which would have been a happier thing.
Yeah, it would have been a happy thing.
Happy slappy.
Or maybe Dagon was just pissed that she littered by throwing the laptop in the lake. That's why he conjured up the storm.
In the seas. Come on.
He don't like that.
You know, Dagon does not like. Dagon is the protector of the sea. He's like Captain Planet,
right?
But of just the sea.
Yeah.
So Captain Sea.
He wants to chill there in the depths.
In the depths.
And have his depths be all clean.
I like when he Dagon does the Barbara at the end of the movie.
Right.
That's the climax.
I thought he needed her alive, though, and he just ripped her arms off the chains.
Did he? Yeah.
All right. I got the names.
Okay.
So the podcast that does Call of Cthulhu is called Cthulhu and Friends. And the board game, Eldritch Horror, which looks freaking awesome.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Was that Call Girls of Cthulhu? Was that a thing?
Yeah.
That is a movie.
I thought about picking that.
I didn't want to.
There's also a Billy. Remember the show Billy and Mandy?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's also an episode of that called
Yog-Sothoth.
Prank Call of
was
Cthulhu
in that.
Was on one episode. Prank Call of Cthulhu was an episode.
They also had Yog-Sothoth in there.
That was a fun little show.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of Lovecraft references there.
And Billy and Mandy and Evil Con Carne. It's a combination, and they split the two apart.
Yep.
Which was weird. That was a good little show. It's a good little number. I enjoyed it.
Well, the Cthulhu cult in this movie definitely has way cooler imagery than Christianity does. Holy fuck.
Oh, yeah. It's a better
all-around. The little double hooky symbol.
Right, the Taurus-looking thing. And then, then the guy's, like, instead of the cross, it's like that crazy scepter thing.
Mm-hmm. Like the fishy knife?
Yeah. It's like a trident. It's like an evil trident.
Mm. Okay. Oh, and they had the pyramid thing that they would throw in the water.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of fun.
Is it here, Dagon?
Fuck Dagon.
Come on, buddy.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, that's exactly what we want. Yeah, she does get all...
And their children will live forever.
Yeah, why not? Why not, I say.
That was good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she gets all slimy after she gets the Dagon load blown all over her. That was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I didn't think
that's at the end.
Interspecies.
Right.
It's interspecies, but he's a god, so he can make that happen.
Right, but then she gets dipped back down again.
No. He brings her up slowly, but it had happened already.
Right, it had happened already. But then she goes down again.
No, well, Dagon comes up and grabs her, and rips her arms off.
Says mine.
Right.
But I thought she needed her alive to make fish babies.
Maybe he just keep her under there and he can just rip out the baby when it's ready. He's a god. These rules are different, you know.
So I guess they've shown this movie on TV.
Not my TV.
Once or twice. And obviously they edited out some boobies. And they edited out her arms.
being
still hanging
off.
On
oh,
the.
That's a bummer.
Yeah.
That's like normal. You can go on like.
I know.
Well. Yeah, it probably aired at like 8 o'clock.
Right.
Yeah.
Perfect time.
Perfect time, prime time.
Perfect time for some Elder God rape.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So I like the human mask that the Cthulhu people wore, the Dagon people wore.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you wearing that stupid human suit?
They might have edited out the live skinning, too.
Oh, yeah, that was good business. Mm-hmm. That was good for business. That was really good.
Mm-hmm. You know, just there's more of the relentless shit. It just, like, keeps on
cool
fucking going.
Halloween costume. I don't think I've ever seen anyone do that. You just wear a human mask, and it looks obviously just
hanging off.
Looks kinda like.
Kind of like Leatherface or something?
Yeah.
Pleatherface. That's my, that's my drag
awesome
queen name.
That's great.
Butterface.
Check out these nipples.
Check out my nips. So raw. So tingly.
Oh, the fight sequences in like all the in all the action sequences and whatnot. The sound effects are hilarious. If you act, like the punching and kicking noises are just like generic punching and kicking. It's like.
It's just like I just have like a synthesizer and there's like
right. It's like it is exactly like an internet soundboard.
Yep.
Pow.
Pow. Yeah.
Bam. Zip zip.
I thought that was super entertaining.
Shaboing going.
$4.8 million well spent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So I mean, I doubt this movie made its money back even after after DVD releases or, you know. I don't know how that works. Do they sell it to a distribution company and then that's that?
I think so. I think you can get some amount of royalties when it's sold. I don't know how that works.
Right, like you sell, like, the right to distribute it. And then
I think they get, like, a small amount of royalties per.
Yeah, you probably keep some royalties because if they show it on TV or something, you might get a little bit.
So, but, for sales, I think
but
you still get
pretty
royalties.
Much, so, like, Lionsgate would get any money
mm-hmm.
from, like, sales, and maybe some royalties would go to the.
Back so you guys ever seen like Castle Freak or anything? Any of these other Gordon Yuzna productions?
Mm-mm.
They're pretty silly.
Castle Freak. Jeffrey Combs plays the Castle Freak, which is essentially it's the same idea as like The Outsider, where it's like a monster in a pit, but it doesn't really go into like
the psychological detail that the story did that made it good.
It's too bad he wasn't in this movie.
Jeffrey Combs?
Yeah.
Yeah, he wasn't. I mean, and also, I don't think Stuart Gordon did, like, the sequels to Reanimator, because there's Bride of Reanimator, there's Beyond Reanimator, Jeffrey Combs is in both of them. He's also in The Pit and the Pendulum, which is, like, obviously the Poe story, The Pit and the Pendulum.
Mm-hmm.
He's also plays Lovecraft in the movie Lovecraft, which I don't know if that was Gordon or not. Probably, it seems like it should have been, because it's Lovecraft, the
when
movie.
When was that?
It's a 90s movie, 92, I think. It's just called Lovecraft. It's just Lovecraft going to a weird library and reading these stories about, like, Cthulhu and shit. And it's pretty wacky. It's not the best.
I think a Lurker at the Threshold movie would be fucking awesome.
I think it would be a very good movie. I agree. I agree with you there. Absolutely.
I've always wanted to, like, when I build my house, just make, like, a one of those rotating window.
Oh, yeah. The
window, and, like, and have, like, a weird squat fucking little tower out in the woods.
Yeah.
That you can see from it.
Story.
I thought that would be fucking cool.
Like, oh, what's that up there? Nothing.
The Ambrose Bierce, was that his name? Ambrose Pierce or some shit?
Ambrose something. Yeah.
Or Duart? Ambrose Duart? I don't know.
I think it started with a D. I feel like it started with a D.
Yeah. That was crazy.
Duart.
Who's the writer, Ambrose something? Was he the guy who did, like, the King, not the King in Yellow, and the, I don't know, there's like the, it's the thing that the True Detective's referencing.
Oh, yeah.
I read a couple of those stories from the from that book, The Yellow King or whatever.
I remember doing a
King.
Very brief amount of research.
The King in Yellow, Robert, oh, I'm thinking of, that's Robert W. Chambers, yeah. I read the first one, which was, I think, was just called The King in Yellow, and it's like a guy's, he's, along with another guy, is a, they're getting information on people and that they're going to blackmail to get power in society, but it turns out they're both schizophrenic and there's these suicide booths throughout the story you gradually realize are probably just subway platforms. It's weird.
Hmm.
Yeah.
It's kind of fucked
that
up.
That sounds fun.
It's fun, though. It's very fun.
Wait, that was this?
This is the key. That's the King in Yellow.
King in Yellow,
yeah.
Hey, what was the main character's name in Dagon?
Something stupid. Hold on.
Yeah.
It was Ezra Godden. Hmm.
So both him and Chilling Gasp, I think, had Miskatonic t-shirts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was always with the Miskatonic t-shirts.
Yeah.
Yeah. The same thing also, Stuart Gordon also did an episode of Masters of Horror, which we talked about a little bit when we talked about John Carpenter, because he did a couple episodes of that. He did the Dreams at Witch House. It's the one where, like, Stuart Gordon, I know Carolyn Purdy his wife said she would leave him if he did the scene where they sacrifice the baby at the end, and he did it anyway. So I guess she didn't leave him, but apparently it was an issue with the network and his wife that they didn't want him, because there's a baby sacrifice at the end, and he ends up doing it. And the actor is the same guy who plays Ezra. It's Paul Marsh, and he plays a doctor who goes to some witch house, and the witch possesses him, and they have to sacrifice a baby. And there's a little cat with a human face, which is really extra creepy. Actually, that Masters of Horror episode might be like one of the better things I've seen Stuart Gordon do since Reanimator. Because, I mean, Dagon is kind of a silly.
Cats are sort of creepy, yeah. Too.
Cats can be creepy with a human face. Now, picture a cat with a human face.
Like a sphinx.
Or just a regular human face. Just a normal cat with a flesh face.
Hey, guys.
Like a sphinx.
Okay. It's fucking creepy.
Yeah.
What's
that? Like a regular cat with a regular human face.
Yeah.
That's even creepier than, like, a stone sphinx that we think of.
Walking around, talking to you, telling you to do things.
Word.
That would be good.
Yeah. Don't listen to fish bitches.
No, never listen to the fish bitch.
Mm-mm.
They're all trouble. They're all trouble. Your father should have told you about that.
They have the same father.
Who is the same father?
Oh, they the fish bitch and the guy.
Right. He's it's a sort of Luke and Leia scenario.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
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 Are they supposed to mate?
She wins.
Keep it in the
family. Right. He kills himself, but then he comes back as a zombie, right?
Mm-hmm. No. She grabs. At the end when he sets himself on fire.
Uh huh.
She's like, oh no! And
they push him down. In. So right. Right. Right.
Fire out.
Oh yeah.
So he gets burned, but he's
and then magically alive. He has gills.
No, he's had.
Well, he's had gills. He has stomach pain.
Mm. He had gills from before.
Oh.
Because they're like, she's like, oh look. They're like, oh, because he's like, father, look, or whatever. The guy, he's like,
right. And if you look backwards in the film, they show, it's always there. There's always the three lines on both sides of his stomach there. It's always there, but it doesn't look. It doesn't look like cuts or gills.
I don't know if I thought
it's
of
all
it.
Closed
they're
up.
Dormant.
Uh-huh. Right.
Yeah.
And then, the burning happens, and he's good now.
Yeah. But and then so their whole thing is they, want to...
Right, they're brother and sister, and they're supposed to bang and make some more
shit. Well, she wants that. That's what she wants, I don't think.
Well, I think that's what Dagon wants.
Fish baby.
Okay.
Dagon wants.
Aryan
fish
that's all
baby.
We can, that's all
but
we can do.
But all of them in general, they like Dagon because they want to live under the sea with him and for eternity.
Yeah.
And be, immortal or whatever.
You want to live forever.
And, this is one line from the guy is funny. It's funny because I think it was the fish lady. She's talking about how, we're going to be immortal and stuff. He's like, but there's some weird trick. You're going to be some fucking fish.
You trying to be fish? You want to be immortal? You want to be a fish?
Yeah.
He's I pretty much do anything for immortality.
I think
your
name was
about?
Unix or something.
Who?
Where?
Unix. Lady?
Yeah.
Well, he's got it right there.
I'm not going to read it to him. Mind your business.
So... Yeah, but then at the end,
Uxia.
I like the music too.
Uxia.
Uxia.
Mm-hmm. Uxia.
The music, particularly at the end, and because then it's they're under the sea now, and you're
under
now
the
we can
sea.
Be into the sea forever. But it's that music.
Life would be
eerie.
Better if it is wetter.
It's like reverse Little Mermaid.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of a reversal Little Mermaid thing,
mm-hmm.
Which makes some sense because you find out these fairy tales that we all love as kids, they're all pretty fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
When you read the real ones, the real version of Little Red Riding Hood.
Hansel and Gretel.
Hansel and Gretel and all. But Little Red Riding Hood I like because, the cat calls the girl, calls Little Red Riding Hood, when she drinks her grandmother's blood because the wolf leaves it in a bottle of wine, he says, only a whore would drink her grandmother's blood. And they read this to kids? Apparently. I think this is a time period.
Where was the MPAA for that?
Well, here's the thing. The idea that kids are not just little adults is fairly recent. It's they were considered to be that for a very long time.
until, you know, modern
unexperienced
modern
adults.
School modern pedagogy kicked in, and then we started looking at it a little differently. But up until then, they were pretty much treated like little adults. Like, you work, you watch mom and dad do their thing, you know, don't tell anyone, but, you know, didn't matter. Yeah.
Well, they didn't really have a chance. Like, you either worked as a kid or you died.
It was a different world. That's my point. When these stories were coming out, and they were trying, these stories were geared towards, you know, telling your kid what to do. Like, don't fuck over your family. Work. Don't be a little dickhead. Don't wander off in the woods.
Watch out for witches.
Watch out for witches. And wolves. They're real. And wolves. I kind of like the idea.
Wolves are bad.
Wolves are bad. But, you know.
Okay.
They're interesting.
Wolves are bad. Interesting. Okay.
They're bad. You're bad. That's bad. Me bad.
Oh, I wanted to also kind of mention, so you know how, so you have like the idea of, so like archetypal ideas of like, so water, going underwater, you have like, when you have like creature forms of animals, like, so you have like underwater animals, you have like amphibious animals, and kind of like, sort of like a sort of shamanic perspective. It's like so what, you know, what does that mean? You're, you know, so that's like our past, right? So it's like this kind of regression,
right?
You know,
yeah, oh yeah.
So it's like this, yeah.
Devolution.
I think that's the theme there. Not Devolution. Explicit, but like the obvious, like theme. Some sort of regression.
And you can tie that into the Lovecraft idea, because he has all these fears of like. He looks at other cultures as like, he uses other cultures. Obviously, he's xenophobic and it's obviously problematic, but he uses it in this, he uses his problematic xenophobia in this literary way where it becomes a metaphor for regression and like just the overall lack of modernity.
Subhumanness.
Going back to the sea is very much along the same lines as human regression, and that the, like, humans are. Deep down, we're all evil little animals. Mm-hmm. We're greasy, and we, you know, but we need to get past that because in, you know, New England, everybody's perfect, you know, and we've moved on. And yeah, that's kind of his idea. So like, that's his like very racist, but, you know, very Lovecraftian idea that like the modern New England man is like something to be held up and praised, and everything else is slipping back into chaos.
Long gone New England eccentrics who dwelt in attics.
Yeah, and he also, he lived in his aunt's house and had almost no money, and wrote for...
He was a very sickly man, too,
very sickly. Both his parents
beans a day.
Died in mental hospitals. So he thought he would probably die in a mental hospital, although he didn't, but he did get colon cancer and died pretty painfully.
Colon cancer.
He was pretty young, too. He was, like, less than 30, right?
When he got colon cancer, I don't know.
I think he was in his 30s.
When did he die?
I think he died pretty freaking young.
Probably.
Well,
33 at the most. I think I thought he was like 22.
Well, it would have been like the 30s or the
40s. Yeah.
I didn't know they really.
I mean, there's a
diagnosed cancer like back then.
No, they did. He had colon cancer. So.
1937.
No, he was
46.
46. Yeah. So. But,
so wait, what year?
But still, that's fairly young even for back then.
Well, the, you know, the thing is, people didn't just die early back then. It's that there were so many infant deaths that it skewed the the average. But so
stupid infants,
so dying all the time. But yeah, but there's all, you know, there's a period in H.P. Lovecraft's life. So he starts off writing at his under his family's roof and everything, and then he moves to, he gets married to a woman. He moves to New York. City. He hates it there because there's too many different cultures there, and it freaks him out. And eventually,
I never do that.
Yeah, and eventually he divorces his wife, who described him as an adequately excellent lover for some reason, which is a weird thing to say about somebody. I can't tell if that's a compliment or an insult. And it's like
adequately excellent.
Well, he had all, you know, allegedly he had all these problems with like touching people and like problems at dinner parties because he's afraid of fish and stuff like that. So, but he apparently he branched out a little bit and got married for a period of time, and then ended up getting
a
divorce.
Picture of this. His wife?
Remember, she's pretty. She was a looker, I think. I don't know. But anyway, he was not. His friends called him Old Lantern Jaw. That's his friends.
Yeah, his wife was a looker. Sonia Green?
Yeah.
That's a nice name.
And she was born in Russia.
That's a pretty name.
Mm-hmm. She ended up moving, I think, to, like, where did the World's Fair take place? Because I think that's where she moved.
World's Fair?
Kansas? No, was it Kansas?
I don't know.
I forget. But anyway, she moved away and from New York City and left him there, and he had a horrible time. That's where you get stories like the whore at Red Hook and stuff like that. And then he moves back to New England and is very, very happy to do so.
Oh, she was a writer as well.
Ah.
Look at this awkward look on his face.
He's a weird-looking dude.
Yeah, old lantern jaw.
She is best known for her 2-year marriage to American weird fiction writer H.P. Lovecraft.
What are you known for? Well,
American weird fiction writer is the wiki article says.
Mm-hmm. That's what he is. He's heavily influenced by Robert Chambers, obviously, and Algernon Blackwood, who's a good weird fiction writer in his own right.
I don't know, damn.
He's also weird, very Lovecrafty stuff.
Oh. She was married 3 times.
Yeah. Whoa, what a hussy.
Dude. They didn't divorce.
Mad hussy. They didn't divorce, they just separated.
Yeah, and he died.
Yeah.
So that's sort of like divorce.
His grave says, I am
Samuel Providence. Green, married 1899, died 1916. H.P. Lovecraft, married 1924, died 1937. Nathaniel Davis, 1936, died 1946.
She's a black widow,
dude. Oh, my goodness.
Wait, what happened?
She was married 3 times, and all of her husbands died.
Black widow status.
So her first marriage was in 1899, and Lovecraft was born in 90.
Maybe she's
90.
A great old one.
Right. So she was 7 years older than him.
Black widow.
Wait, look at this. Huh. Oh, what the fuck is that? I think it might not
be
real.
Oh, my God. That looks like one of the things from the Mario movie.
Okay. Oh, the Goombas?
Yeah.
Which is super racist, right? Goombas, mm-hmm. Isn't that like a racial slur against Italians? And that's fun.
Anyway, something like that.
Goombas. The Goombas. They're like the little mushroom people in the game. I don't remember. But
visual jokes on podcasts come up.
We're looking at a picture of a woman who looks like a Goomba from the Mario Brothers movie. I don't know what it has to do with H.P. Lovecraft, unless it was like his mother or one of his aunts or something. Apparently,
I think somebody should look into the Sonya Green character.
I don't know, yeah. It's a little sketchy, right?
Yeah. And nothing's known about her other than really about...
I don't know how you give somebody colon cancer, though.
Right.
Unless she was just like sticking radium up his butt everywhere.
Right, I was going to say.
You could just get those things at store.
And I'll take a quart of radium, sir, and some penicillin for my vagina.
And some cocaine.
All right, they might have divorced because she married Nathaniel Davis before H.P. Lovecraft died, but that doesn't really necessarily mean they got divorced.
Yeah, it was in a different city back then. They didn't really communicate.
Yeah. You probably just... Yeah, she was in either Ukraine or Russian Empire. That's where she was born.
We don't even know where she was born.
She was married at 16.
That's Buck Rogers.
Somebody great.
That would be a cool. Oh, that would be a cool Halloween costume. If you could pull it off, someone who could H.P. Lovecraft.
Oh yeah. If you're somebody who's tall and get a prosthetic chin, you know.
Yeah.
Cause they don't make chins like that anymore.
Nope.
You're gonna have to buy that thing.
I'm pretty sure you terminate that before it comes out of the womb.
Oh yeah. He looks like a failed abortion for sure.
Oh, that's pretty rough.
So he's pretty rough looking.
Green's best-known story is The Horror at Martin's Beach, revised and edited by H.P. Lovecraft, and retitled as The Invisible Monster when published in Weird Tales.
Huh. That's kind of nice.
Yeah.
Pulled together, just writing some weird tales together. That sounds kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder why it didn't work out, other than the fact that he was like a total shut-in and a freak. But I think that was the main issue. She got a job somewhere else and moved away, and he refused to go with her. Which is weird, because he refused to go with her, and yet he stayed in New York, where she hated.
California.
Something like that. But he hated New York, and he stayed there while she was gone for some reason, and then decided to go back to New England after that. And live with his aunts. He had 2 weirdo aunts.
That just spells trouble.
It's a sordid, odd tale, and he never really made any money off of his stories. I mean, he didn't really become popular until he died, of course, you know.
Mm.
That old.
As is.
That old story, you know?
Yeah.
In death.
Huh. Wow. Okay, so she had a hat shop in Brooklyn.
Ah, yes, that I remember. She's a hat girl.
And she lost the shop, and old Howard there couldn't find work. So she moved to Cleveland, and Lovecraft lived by himself in Red Hook. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, hat girls. You know, there's another hat girl in the Jack the Ripper story. Because there's the alleged Jack the Ripper story where it was maybe the Queen's doctor who was involved. He's a Freemason. If you read From Hell, it's basically From Hell. Mm-hmm. But anyway, there's a hat girl who the prince knocks up, and then the queen has her killed has her doctor kill him, and stage it as this grand murder, and then in the From Hell story, he just decides he's going to kill a ton more women because he decides it's going to be this super ritual to suppress womankind for all of history, because he thinks that the patriarchy is slipping at this time, so he decides he's like, I'm going to kill these women and instill fear in them and also turn it into this great ritual, and so he's like, there's some gods he's trying to appease and stuff, and it's all this big blood ritual to suppress the
Wait,
women.
This is From Hell?
They still got the vote, though. This is From Hell.
Okay.
In America, but not in England. Nobody votes in England. It's still a monarchy there, right?
Yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm. No, just a one king.
Yep.
King, tea and crumpets. King Richard.
King Elizabeth.
King Elizabeth the third. Just making everybody eat tea and crumpets all the time. Not a good scene.
You know, they put milk and sugar in their tea.
Yeah. A lot of people put milk and sugar in their tea. The only main difference is they don't leave the tea bags in the tea.
Yeah.
They steep it, and then they take the tea bag out, put the cream, the milk, and the sugar in.
Never realized
that's
that.
The only real difference. A lot of people do that.
Just take the tea bag out because it's kind of pain in the ass.
Right. Yeah.
After it's steeped, it's done.
Yeah. A lot of people in America leave the tea bag in, though.
Well, I just drink black coffee.
That's being lazy.
Well, or just not knowing.
Well, if you're gonna put sugar and cream in there, it's a pain in the ass. Well, what are you gonna do?
Right. You lift it slightly and stir it.
Or stir it with the tea bag.
Not all tea bags have
strings on them.
That's true too.
That's what I mean. The strings.
So you just
and then the Chinese leave the tea at the bottom, without a bag.
Or you can have like some matcha situation where it's so finely
grained that you can just mix it right in there.
There's some other places where you just like pour the hot water on and fucking take the tea right out, the leaves right out of there.
Or you can boof it.
Mm-hmm.
It's all up to you.
I'm a fan of that.
Yeah.
Pour that shit quick.
Pour it right into your butt. Butt chug it.
Mm-hmm.
You get that real good tea buzz. There's coffee enemas. I don't know if there's tea enemas, though. You ever heard about this coffee enemas?
No.
I've heard it's the term.
It's a thing.
I've heard about coffee enemas.
People take coffee enemas.
They're wonderful. I've heard that.
That's what I have also heard.
I wanted to try one when I heard about this, and then... Because there was like this.
I'm not doing it.
These people were doing this, like had this glowing praise or something about it. Right?
I am not helping you.
I think you can manage a coffee enema on your own. I don't think you need a partner. You might help.
You get one of the little squirter things.
I think you could do it like a solo thing.
Yeah.
A solo thing. Solo booth. But like, no, I forgot this story that someone told me, but then it was like a husband or wife, and they were really into it, and then the other person was like, I don't know. Whatever. And then they showed it to them one day. He's like,
"Oh yeah, that was on My Strange Addiction." There was an episode of it, and the wife was getting deeply involved in these coffee enemas.
Yeah, the husband
was like, "This is sick. This is insane. You need to stop." She's like, "Just try it, Dave. Just try it, just once." And he tries it, and he gets addicted too.
Yeah. So that right there makes me. It's like there's something.
There's something going on.
Well, the thing is,
you got the glands in your butt. You know? So it goes straight to your fucking brain.
It's glands. It's just really thin. It's a thin membrane.
It's a thin membrane between your.
The blood vessels,
capillaries.
And it probably feels fun in your prostate parts.
Yeah, it's boofing. You're boofing coffee.
Mm-hmm.
You're boofing it up.
It's not technically boofing because
it's going up your butt. Well,
it's in a liquid form.
So it's an enema.
It's a coffee enema.
We're
trying to find a comparison here so we can understand this coffee enema situation.
No, I'm going to make a little note here. Remind myself about these.
I'm gonna make a note. Never try a coffee enema.
Oof, coffee.
I don't think I'll have much
Espresso
trouble.
Espresso enema.
That's fun. Why don't I just go cocaine enema?
Or just inject it straight into your butthole. You can do both of those things
at the same time.
Just mix it with a little bit of saline.
There you go. You're in it.
In it to win it.
That's right.
Hmm.
That's where, yeah. This was a natural course for this conversation to take. Makes sense to me. Makes sense to Lovecraft from beyond the grave. He is Providence. He is Providence.
Yeah?
Yeah. Also, you know, the Ruben Chepina album, Cacophony. You should listen to that.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. It's
my favorite.
Lovecraft. It's the best.
Pretty sweet album.
It's got a great stuff. Got a great stuff in there.
Yeah. So many bands and stuff have taken
Lovecraft craps.
Yep.
They
boofed Lovecraft very many times.
Their music, Metallica, has Lovecrafted.
Oh, yeah. Sagoth.
Portal. Wait, there's two songs, right? There's
right. Call of Cthulhu
and then...
The Thing That Should Not Be.
Oh, right, yeah. Call of Cthulhu is all instrumental.
Correct.
Yeah, The Thing That Should Not Be, there's that awesome line, where it's like...
Stranger, not Dead Witch, Eternal Lie.
Yeah.
With Stranger Eons, Eons, Even Death May Die.
Yeah. Dead, death, dead, death, dead, death. Dead, death.
Yeah.
So good.
Mm-hmm.
So tasty. Lovecraftian. Yum, yums. Mm-hmm. So like us on Instagram. Like us on... Oh, we don't have an Instagram. Sorry. Don't like us on Instagram. Delete your Instagram. Like us on Twitter, Facebook. Seriously.
Other things.
Thank you for listening. You should
Stitcher, yeah.
Yeah. If you can find
iTunes.
The time.
iTunes, I think that's the important one.
Yeah, iTunes, we're on iTunes. We are on Spotify. They're all equally important. We're on SoundCloud. That's our sort of home base. Like us on there. Write a comment. Right? If you like us, write a positive comment. If you don't like us,
are the most
tell us anyway.
Tell us anyway. We don't care. We might even, you know, listen to you. If you have suggestions, I don't know. It depends. Depends on how we're feeling that day.
We might even, like, read them on air and call you out for grammatical errors and shit.
You're right.
Yeah. So,
no. Nazis.
No, we probably will have to do
that. Grammar Nazis.
Yeah, well.
Over here.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe we won't, like, make fun of you, but we'll read it on air and...
Yeah. We'll give you shout-outs. We'll give you a shout-out.
Good or bad.
Good or bad. Any kind. All the kinds.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you so much for listening.
Night-night.
We enjoy doing this. Thank you.
Till next time.
Toodles.
Wait, never mind. Bye.
Bye.